All right, everyone, hello. Welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock, and I am joined by my boys. They had me on their show like 2.5 months ago now. Nate and Ryan from The Breakout Finder. You can subscribe to their stuff on Patreon. You can also find Nate on the Fantasy Mansion podcast, the Roto Underworld. And I think the idea was we talked a bunch before the draft. We had all our opinions on the guys before the draft, and I wanted to have the guys on this show after they graciously had me on their show to just kind of run through what the 2020 rookie class is like, what we expect it to be like for fantasy. Already got some good debates going before we hopped on the show. And, you know, Nate, I got to kick it to you like this. Is Leonard Fournette going to be a Jacksonville Jaguar this year, or is he going to get traded for a sixth-round pick?
Wow. This is an incredible question.
It's your worst nightmare, Nate.
To tilt to right off the bat. I know that you put him on the show sheet here, and it makes me nervous. You know, Davis, I thought he was going to get traded during the draft. So to be quite honest with you, I was pretty shocked with the way that Jacksonville handled a lot of the players that were already on the roster, the way that the organization has dealt with this team. The assumption was that Leonard Fournette was gone. So I don't know that they actually move Leonard Fournette, and here's why. Because the Cam Newton corollary, and this is my big thing right now, you see that Jacksonville is on the hunt for a quarterback. Cam Newton says that he is not going to be a backup quarterback anywhere. We had Leonard Fournette and Cam Newton tweeting at each other. He wants him to come play in Jacksonville. And having a mobile quarterback is always a benefit to a running back. So I could see a scenario where Leonard Fournette maybe stays around. But my curiosity is how fractured is the organization at this point? And if Leonard Fournette goes anywhere else, I would necessarily have to downgrade him a little bit purely because I don't think he sees the target share that he saw in Jacksonville.
I mean, all right, Ryan. Let's get some logic in here. This team signed Chris Thompson. Even if Cam Newton comes there, or he doesn't, right? Cam Newton or Gardner Minshew, doesn't matter. Either of them are the starting quarterback. I'm setting the line at 50.5 targets for Leonard Fournette, over or under with Chris Thompson on the roster.
Again, Thompson's one of the premier guys. The story with Thompson has been just his bill of health. If he's healthy, let's assume health, I'm gonna hit the under on Fournette. But again, I want to preface that answer by saying, unlike my good friend Nate over here, I am you know, Davis, last time I had you on the show, you resurfaced your tweet, your Leonard Fournette tweet, which we should probably retweet again just for the sake of nostalgia.
Yeah, I'll go find it. I'll go find it while we're recording this one. So, it's worth retweeting.
It's so good. And again, I've been of the mind that Leonard Fournette just isn't a very good football player. And again, to Nate brings up some good points, and you know, we're expecting the plus touchdown regression and all that stuff, but he's just not a good pass catcher, not a reliable pass catcher. So I'm very comfortable going the under, assuming that my guy Chris Thompson can stay healthy or play close to 16 games.
All right, this is your chance, Nate. Refute the Chris Thompson signing.
I mean, we all know that Chris Thompson is a great pass catcher, so it certainly is concerning to see a player of this skill set enter this backfield. But at the same time, there wasn't much competition for Leonard Fournette when he was on the field last year. I think he had a 91.7% snap share in Jacksonville that was number two at the position. So the question is, how often is Chris Thompson going to be on the field? Is he going to rotate primarily as the third down back? I don't know. Leonard Fournette had over 100 targets, and those are not all third down targets. So while 55 may be fair, because last year we had Raquel Armstead, who had, I think, 24 targets behind him. So very, very underrated usage for him during the season. So I don't know. Chris Thompson would have to get quite a bit of playing time. I think it's fair, but I'm going to take the over on the 55. I have to, Davis. I have no choice.
I mean, look.
The brand relies on it.
You should literally just be like jamming in best ball drafts right now, because Leonard Fournette is a falling knife. No one wants to catch him in these best ball drafts right now. In the running back position, guys, it is tough out there. I've been doing this thought exercise whenever I've been on with like people in shows, and just like literally let's count the number of guys we think are capable of being actual workhorse backs, or not even capable, but project as such. So we have CMC, Barkley, Elliott and Cook. Those are written in stone. Those dudes are getting 250 carries minimum in a 16-game season. Derrick Henry, they don't have Deion Lewis there anymore, so he's going to play more third downs this year than last year, probably. So I think he counts. I think Alvin Kamara, what do we say, Ryan? Does he count? I mean, he comes off the field, but he's going to get a lot of touches. Like, do we think he counts?
Yeah, I think he's got to count. I think the story with Kamara last year was again going back to health. He just wasn't 100%. I think a healthy Kamara in what could be Breeze's, you know, one of his last campaigns here. I think the dude just gets fed, and I think he absolutely counts, man. Way too dynamic to not count.
So, to me, that is the list. That is the list of actual workhorse running backs. Because you look at Miles Sanders, you think Boston Scott's definitely going to steal some of that pass catching work. Like, that's just the Eagles system. Kenyon Drake was hot fire for most of last year after getting traded to Arizona. But again, like, that's sort of show it to me and I'll believe it. I'm not gonna wager too much on it happening before it comes there. Joe Mixon, again, a guy who we think is a good pass catcher, wasn't used as a pass catcher by the Bengals and Zach Taylor last year. Same for your boy Josh Jacobs, Ryan. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a great pass catcher at Alabama. And what did they give Jalen Richard? Like $4 million a year to continue being the third down back?
So frustrating for Jacobs owners. I'm glad you brought up Mixon and Jacobs. Those are the two names that I was going to bring up if you didn't. Going back to Mixon real quick, what is both of your prognosis on Mixon going forward? I think the talent, clearly, Davis hit on the receiving ability, but we've heard the unhappiness. The dude wants a contract, and we don't have to get into a whole running back, you know, and how much they matter or don't matter debate. But I think, with Burrow there, with the offense being revamped, I was ready to kind of push all the chips in on Joe Mixon. Do you guys believe kind of the smoke or the general unhappiness surrounding Joe Mixon right now?
I'm buying Travion Williams. Go ahead, Nate.
Buying Travion Williams. I mean, I'm not so afraid of Joe Mixon. I mean, the holdout isn't a fear anymore, right? Because we've talked about what the collective bargaining agreement has done and how things have changed. Players can't hold out like they could before because they lose the accrued season on their contract. If you have a four-year contract as a rookie like he would, he essentially gives his club a fifth-year option on him. He can hurt himself with fines that the organization can no longer waive. So there's a lot of incentive for a guy to show up to camp. And I think with this offensive line finally being healthy, with the investment in the quarterback, with the offensive weapons on the outside, this should be the year that Joe Mixon gets the full opportunity. I mean, I think they believe in him as a future back in this offense. You know, when you look at 2018, he was down basically a full target per game to 2019. So that certainly hurts the overall cap, because I think he ended up with he was on target for 44. He ends up with 45 on the year. So it's an interesting number. I would like to see him end up as more of like a 65-70 target guy. I don't know if that happens in the Cincinnati offense though.
If you want to make the argument that Mixon is actually being undervalued in drafts and that he should be going, I think you could make the argument that he should be going where Dalvin Cook is going over the last 7 days. If you have a subscription to Fantasy Mojo, which is very affordable, it's a good resource. They have all of the ADP for like the high stakes leagues. So in the Football Guys Players Championship on fantasymojo.com, over the last 7 days, McCaffrey, Barkley, Elliott, Cook are the first four selections. If you look at what Joe Burrow did at LSU and you look at what Zach Taylor was doing in Los Angeles, I think that you could create a pretty compelling narrative that Joe Mixon is going to get fed targets, right?
Oh, yeah.
That they use the running back. Joe Burrow was really comfortable throwing those swing passes to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who we're going to talk about. Mixon was a good pass catcher at Oklahoma. I think that Joe Mixon and Miles Sanders too, but I think Joe Mixon really has a ceiling that we have not seen from him yet. If Joe Burrow is like a B+ rookie quarterback, Ryan.
So if we have a way to tell us a story about Joe Mixon, which I'm so stoked that we do, that has been the guy that, like I just said, that I'm ready to kind of push all the chips in. Josh Jacobs, man, I have this thing about, and I probably talked about it on the Breakout Finder before, I have this thing about just owning Raiders players, just that's just what it is. But Jacobs, man, you know, there was a lot to like. And Matt came out pre-draft and said, listen, we know the target share wasn't there. We need to get it more involved in the passing game. The Raiders go out. They totally revamped the wide receiver room. They, as Davis said, they re-signed Jalen Richard. They added a couple more years to his deal. They got Lynn Bowden Jr. out of the backfield now. The absolute stud, the dynamic score king. So I don't know what happens with Jacobs, man. I don't know. You know, they said one thing, and their actions point in the opposite direction. You know,
they signed and drafted a lot of guys to take the ball away from Josh
Jacobs, right?
That ceiling
shot, boys.
Yeah. So, Joe Mixon, what do we think, Nate?
What do we think? I think that he's a guy that in Dynasty or any format, really, we should be looking at as probably like a top seven guy, top eight guy in the league with a ton more upside if he can get the ball into the end zone. I think that the receiving was certainly the consideration for him. He was averaging 17.4 attempts per game last year. That put him at number 10 in the league. So the attempts were there in terms of rushing, but we want to see that target total go up. And I think to your point, having Joe Burrow in his comfortability with throwing the swing pass, finding his running back in the backfield, we saw it with CEH all year long. That could be a huge boost to him. And again, this offensive line is going to be better this year. They're, you know, 1 year ahead of where they were last year. They're getting AJ Green back, who's healthy. So I think that there's just a lot of weapons in this offense finally. The only question for me is going to be rapport. Day one. These guys aren't talking to each other personally right now. Nobody's working out together. Nobody's training in the offseason. So assuming there's a 2020, things can be pretty weird this year.
Yeah, I mean, that is like, that's a big thing that hangs over all of us, is that all these rookies were excited to see. They might just they might all suck because they don't know the playbook, they don't know each other, they don't know the coach, they don't know the quarterback. So all of that does exist. But anyways, circling back to the larger point that I'm trying to make, that's it in terms of guys that we think are going to be workhorse running backs. You know, Eckler obviously is going to split work with Justin Jackson and Joshua Kelly. Nick Chubb saw, I believe, 11 targets total in games when Kareem Hunt was active last year. I think that was a stat that Retriebar tweeted out today. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I mean, I think best case scenario, we're thinking he is in a 60-40 with Damian, right? That probably sounds about right. Aaron Jones had a great season last year and was still only playing like 60% of the snaps. Now they add A.J. Dillon to take away some of that touchdown upside. Obviously, Fournette. Melvin Gordon, I think, is just a lifelong committee running back at this point if we think he has any juice left. Jonathan Taylor is going to deal with Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines. Le'Veon Bell is going to deal with Frank Gore, LaMichael Pirine, and Trent Cannon.
And Adam Gase.
You might get all the way down to RB 20, 21, and 22 with David Johnson, Chris Carson, and James Conner before you would get me to agree to any sort of argument that there are more potential workhorse backs out there, Nate.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, you're right. And these are the guys that you need to get a hold of early, because a majority of these teams now are in timeshare. And I mean, in New England's one of these teams that we're not talking about right now. And Sony Michel, this is a team that did nothing to its running back situation either. So Sony Michel has been an interesting name to look at all offseason. Now, you're talking about a workhorse role. We know that Sony Michel does not check that box. New England has never used him as a pass catcher. The most he's seen in any season was last season. That was 20 targets. That's not nearly enough to put you on the radar for that. But this is a guy that's basically falling to the wayside. And this is, to me, a guy like Sony Michel is free production. I think he's going to get the opportunity this year. I know that James White is always in the background, but we don't know how the quarterback play could necessarily change this as well. So he is one of the guys that I would be targeting later that I think is going to get a lot more run than he's currently being talked about.
So overarching, I think this is going to feed into our primary topic today, which is rookie drafts and thinking about these rookies. And, you know, if there was not such a dearth of running backs, right? If we felt more comfortable that there were 20, 25 running backs that, you know, we're just going to go out and get 200 to 300 touches, I think, Ryan, that CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy would be the 101 and the 102. But we are so thirsty for points at the running back position that Jonathan Taylor, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, J.K. Dobbins, DeAndre Swift, all of these guys are going ahead of the wide receivers, I think, because of the world that we live in with running back scoring.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, especially, again, everyone's playing, or they should be playing in these full point PPR leagues, where, you know, you want these backs that have shown, you know, capable pass catching prowess. And again, just as you said, naturally that's going to drive these guys up the board. Even someone like Cam Akers, who checked the boxes athletically. We can go back and, you know, quote unquote, watch the film and know where his offensive line ranked. And despite all that, the dude still produced, and still a good bit raw at the position, you know, converted quarterback and then came into Florida State and was learning the running back position. But fell into a pretty decent spot in Los Angeles. We might touch on Los Angeles a little bit, but I guess my overall concern with someone like him, who's going above, you know, guys like Judy, guys like Lamb, is just the situation. But again, we can maybe go into a whole situation versus talent debate here. But yeah, I think the board stacks up nicely for these running backs, and naturally they get pushed up the board. And there's a few of these backs here, which I think you're probably going to allude to in a little bit here, especially the backs at the top, that there's certainly a lot to like.
Yeah. Okay. So scaling back a little bit, I want to get into the rookie conversation, like this, which was, you know, we're watching the draft, we're getting excited, we're starting to think about how these guys are going to do. But I mean, obviously some guys went into really non-opportune situations. So Nate, which guy that you liked went to just like the stone worst spot when you were like, oh, this is terrible, I don't want to see this. Who wants this? No one asked for this.
Man, okay. Well, first off, I think it was Jerry Jeudy. To me, Jerry Jeudy went to the worst spot.
So right bad. Off, yeah.
Right. I mean, Denver was a terrible situation, and it was bad when they called his name, but it got worse when the draft ended, because at first you're like, oh shit, he's playing with Cortland Sutton, he's playing with Drew Lock. This team isn't great at passing. I don't know what Drew Lock is, but then the draft continues, and KJ Hamler goes there, and Albert O goes there, and they've already got Melvin Gordon that they added this year, and you're like. Like, where are all these targets coming from? That's my biggest concern. My concern is not with Jerry Jeudy, the player. It's with the opportunity that he has while playing in Denver and the efficiency of said opportunity. So for me, that was the stone cold worst one, I think.
What about you, Nate? Or what about, sorry, Ryan?
I guess I kind of alluded to a little bit the Cam Akers one. I'm super torn on. I don't know if it's the worst. I think Jerry Jeudy, my initial reaction was Jeudy as well. But going back to Akers, like, I just, and maybe it's just me, boys, but I just think the Rams are going to start to find that cliff and start to just drop off of it. I'm not sure there was any sort of long-term plan there. They kind of fumbled around the draft, some questionable offseason moves. Obviously, a couple years ago, they pushed all their chips in, paid out these enormous contracts, and now they're, you know, offloading and kind of feeling the impact, the ricochet effect of all that. So Cam Akers, on one sense, again, I like the talent, obviously. No Todd Gurley, these two, you know, these are huge pluses for him. But I just think that the Rams are going to start to fumble around, and I don't know if I really trust, you know, the once wonderkin mind of, you know, McVay over there to kind of figure things out with Akers, get him involved enough to kind of justify, as you may have alluded to earlier, Davis, where he's currently going in these rookie drafts.
So actually, I want to push back on that one a little bit. Okay. I agree with the take that Sean McVay doesn't, he has not solved world hunger with his playbook, right?
He doesn't move the needle anymore as much.
Yeah, I think he's like a fine offensive coach, and sure, he's really limited by his quarterback. What I disagree with is I actually think he might end up with the most touches of any of these rookie backs, because if you trade up for Daryl Henderson, you say all these things like, oh, we think of him as our Chris Thompson. Look, man, they had a chance to use him, right? Todd Gurley trying to make jump cuts in 2019 was one of the saddest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, and they were put into such a position that they were forced to be giving carries 4 years into Malcolm Brown's career as an undrafted free agent out of Texas. They finally start using him. They're using him, instead of Daryl Henderson. And then this roster, as you alluded to, it's a mess, right? They don't have corners. They don't have edge rushers. They don't have anything. They don't even have a good offensive line. They really are devoid of talent, and they spend a second round pick on a running back. You know, they have to think at this point, like, this is our guy. And I mean, they're not going to give Daryl Henderson touches. I think that's what they're saying to us, Ryan, that he's not an NFL player.
Is that, I mean, again, and that's, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think it goes back to more my point where these guys, you know, between the front office and the coaching staff, they're just out here, just blind, dude, just kind of flailing around. So that wouldn't surprise me at all. If obviously Akers comes in right away, I think he's a better talent. You know, you can definitely make that argument as well. So I'm again, Akers, not saying he's the stone worst, but he's a player that I think, you know, relative to where he's going to go, where he is going to kind of what the range of outcomes for me, that's going to be something to definitely keep an eye on going forward.
There's,
all right, Nate.
Davis, I was going to say too, well, looking at Los Angeles, man, there's a big discrepancy too between the target distribution from the lead back there and anybody else. When you look last year, Todd Gurley definitely dominated this backfield. He had 223 rush attempts, and Malcolm Brown was second at 69. And then, of course, Daryl Henderson with 39 at number three. But Todd Gurley had 49 targets, and the next two guys had six each. They were irrelevant. Yep. Look at their targets per game. Todd Gurley was averaging 3.27. Both those other guys averaged less than a half a target per game. So the big thing with Cam Akers for me is, even if this offense isn't great, the volume could be there. And that was one thing that made Leonard Fournette fantastic last year. And I know you hate Fournette.
It all comes back to Fournette.
Remember,
it all comes back to Fournette.
He was number seven overall in the league at the running back position. And he played for a terrible team with an awful organization, but he got the workload. He got the volume, and because of that, he was inside the top 10. So that's one of the reasons why I would side with Davis on this. But, you know, all things being considered, it's not my favorite landing spot, but volume is king.
I mean, Peter Overzet has been railing me for my Cam Akers ranking. I have Akers ranked very high in my rookie rankings, even in Superflex. I have him. Mm-hmm. I think I have seventh in Superflex, fifth in regular, so definitely higher than the market. So I'm going to throw this one out there as a bad landing spot, and everyone else thinks it's a good landing spot, which is, makes it hilarious. But so Ron Riviera says that he thinks Antonio Gibson reminds him of Christian McCaffrey, right?
I'm sweating. Mm-hmm.
So not only do they draft our boy Antonio Gibson, they also draft Antonio Gandy-Golden, he's not a running back, but physically very similar prospects, right? Big, tall, fast, strong guys. So if you look in the backfield for Washington, they have Adrian Peterson under contract, $4.5 million guaranteed this year. They have Darius Geis, who they spent a second round pick on. I would imagine that as long as he is healthy, Geis is going to be basically given the starting job, right? They're not going to take it away from him for performance. Yep. They have former Stanford stud Bryce Love, who I know that Bryce Love, that they like him there. In fact, I'll even say why I know that. I'm in a league with Matthew Berry, and Matthew Berry, everyone knows he's a huge Washington fan. He knows people with the team mm-hmm. and everything. And Matthew was in my DMs hounding me to trade for Bryce Love for like 3 days before the draft. But that is enough for me to think, like, first of all, if Matthew's trying to trade me for some random obscure Washington player, he knows something. Now, he never confirmed if he knew anything, but that's always how I read that situation. Like they signed J.D. McKissick. They signed Peyton Barber. I mean, this is quite literally, Ryan, the most crowded situation he could have entered in the entire NFL.
For sure. And I think what gives us Antonio Gibson fans hope is the fact that if, you know, Rivera sees, you know, him as his McCaffrey, wants to exploit, again, that the pass catching chops, you know, Gibson could kind of at least initially be moved all around and kind of, you know, for us as fantasy gamers, he got, I believe, the running back designation, which was key. You know, that's kind of the foundation where a lot of these takes are kind of built on. But from there, you know, you hope that Rivera, you know, Scott Turner, their offensive coordinator, you hope that these guys, you know, just exploit the versatility, at least initially. And then, you know, Peterson, we imagine, is going to walk away at some point soon. Darius Geis, we don't know if he's going to get a healthy season in. Love is interesting to me because, again, Stanford stuff, but I've heard a lot of terrible things about that road back from injury. And then the other guys you mentioned, again, just fodder towards the end of the depth chart. So I think the path for Gibson does open up relatively soon. But to your point, you know, it is currently crowded. So I think year one, you're hoping just to have him, you know, move all around, you know, split out, slot work, whatever it might be. And we can go ahead and cash in a bit earlier on that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess essentially my thought is that I do not see a path for him to get 100 touches as a rookie. Whereas I think dark horse, I think Lynn Bowden Jr. could just be a Gruden grinder, right? I think Lynn Bowden Jr.
Yes.
I think we might have to bend the knee, Nate.
Oh God, bless you. Yes. Yes. Look, hey, he got the draft capital. I mean, that was all that mattered to me, right?
Check the box, boys.
Check that box. So, I mean, he was, without a doubt, one of the most dynamic players that we've ever had in the Breakout Finder system, the Breakout Finder app, which people that are listening to this, if you don't use it, you can find it in the Apple Store. You can find it in the Google Play Store. It is very cool. It's a wide receiver-only app right now, but Lynn Bowden was clearly in it.
The king.
The king. You know, we brought up Gibson, but look at Kentucky. This guy really did do everything. I mean, quarterback,
literally, running, literally, bro, everything.
Literally. Guy was doing absolutely everything. And I just hope that in Oakland they use him right. I'm concerned with what his overall touch level might be, even in Oakland. I mean, as much as Gibson is probably capped with Washington, and I totally agree, I wonder what Lynn Bowden's overall ceiling really is. And if Lynn Bowden does hit it, then Josh Jacobs is dead. I mean, you know what I mean?
Stone dead. Yeah,
actually dead. He's purely a first and second down grinder. We knew he was a pass catcher. They didn't use him. There's no way his odds of being used as a pass catcher just got better. I mean, Bryan Edwards goes there. Henry Ruggs goes there. Lynn Bowden goes there. You don't draft all those guys to do what you were supposed to do a year earlier before you invested all this draft capital. So I'm a big fan of Lynn Bowden. If it was between the two, I'm certainly on the Bowden side. I just think that talent will prevail here. And the guy's done it on every level, whether it was high school or college, at all positions. And again, he got the draft capital.
Yeah, got the draft capital. Okay, we got it. We got to hit what everyone is here for, right? Every fantasy podcast has to have their Clyde Edwards-Helaire versus Jonathan Taylor debate. Though, I think all of us are aligned that if you have the first selection in your rookie draft, super flex, tight end premium, one quarterback, best ball, doesn't matter. You select Clyde Edwards-Helaire from the Kansas City Chiefs, and you skip on your merry way down the road, Ryan. And I will not accept anything else.
I'm gonna say my little piece on it. As we talked about pre-show, poor Nate over here got put in the ring with Matt Kelly for far too long to go back and forth. But I think, you know, we all were again in lockstep early on. You know, Jonathan Taylor, a supreme talent. He came off the board and landed in Indianapolis behind that offensive line. You know, two huge boxes obviously checked. But at the end of the day, it shouldn't matter. It doesn't really matter because one of these players is now tethered to Patrick Mahomes for the next X amount of years. You know, having Andy Reid in his corner as well, you know, the front office Reid, these guys comparing him, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire to the next, you know, better, someone that's better than Brian Westbrook was out of Philadelphia. So whether you believe in pure landing spot, draft capital, narrative street, whatever floats your boat, Edwards-Helaire, you know, landing with Patrick freaking Mahomes. You know, this guy, the situation doesn't get much better for running back. I think, you know, we had Brand Barfield's Barrett on the show a week or two ago, and they came in emphatically, Davis, flamethrowers out, said it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and it's not even close. Like, they didn't even want to talk about Jonathan Taylor. So I can't believe poor Nate had to put up with Matt Kelly for upwards of 40 minutes.
It's just not for you to believe that Jonathan Taylor is still the 101, you have to think that the Indianapolis has some sort of quarterback plan past Phil Rivers. So you got to think that maybe they're going to get Justin Fields or something, right? Or that they are, you know, that they're going to string along a road of veteran quarterbacks for the next 4 years, right? They're going to go from Aaron Rodgers from Phil Rivers to, you know, Drew Brees. They're going to get Carson Palmer out of retirement. You know, who knows, right? Whatever. You got to think that is in the range of outcomes. Or you got to think, I guess, maybe Jacob Eason is the real deal. I don't know. But no, there is not a scenario. I mean, okay. All right, Nate, if I was going to offer you a bet that the Colts were going to score more points of real football points on offense over the next 4 years than the Chiefs, what kind of odds would I have to give you? Like 5-1 or something to get you to take that bet? Like you would not accept that wager under any circumstance. So what you'd have to be arguing for Jonathan Taylor to be the 101 is that running backs do in fact matter, right?
I think that Indianapolis has kind of shown their hand a little bit on what they do with running backs. And we talked a little bit pre-show about this. Look, Marlon Mack, and this happened a lot in this draft. Ryan and I talked about this on another podcast. We saw A.J. Dillon go to Green Bay. Aaron Jones is a free agent end of this year. We saw Clyde Edwards go to Kansas City. Damian Williams is a free agent end of this year. We watched Jonathan Taylor go to the Colts. Marlon Mack is a free agent end of this year. So a lot of these could be hedges against the running backs. But Nyheim Hines is still there until 2021. We've seen the Colts use sort of a two-back system with a guy that's more of a primary pass catcher. We know that Jonathan Taylor's not a pass catcher. And I've got a whole long thing about how the Colts didn't prioritize Jonathan Taylor. He just fell in their lap, and they traded up to get him. And I got a big, big theory on this, and it kind of continues to push me in the Clyde Edwards-Helaire direction, because Kansas City's going to be in the red zone more. They're going to be the best offense in the league for the next – take a pick, 8-10 years. I don't know, until Patrick Mahomes falls apart. I mean, that guy's the game changer. It doesn't matter that Clyde Edwards is undersized. We saw Brian Westbrook years, 2004 to 2008, finishes the RB 7-10-4-1-8. Jesus Christ. I mean, think about this. Andy Reid's had, 12 different guys score over 63 targets in his 21-year career. Six of those went for more than 90 targets. He's going to get fed. And in PPR leagues, that's the difference, because you go look back at how guys finished this year. Nick Chubb got a million touches this year. He got like 348 touches this year to Austin Eckler, who had like 250, and Austin Eckler beat him by 50 season-long points. Why
does he just is just targets? I mean, and people should know this, right? They should know that a target is worth like it's like roughly like 2.5, like two, like three two, times 2. More 8, than a carry. 3.
Yep.
Yeah.
2.83 times more than a carry. Just a target. So, like, yeah, that's a Scott Barrett metric. So a reception is worth more than 2.83 times a carry. So, like, it's just mind-boggling that you would even make the argument, that even, like, even think for a second that Jonathan Taylor would be the guy that you would even ponder over Clyde Edwards-Helaire when he's, like, the perfect fit that ever happened. I mean, this is so ridiculously perfect that he went to play in this offense. He fits the profile of every running back that Andy Reid has ever drafted. Andy Reid has never taken a back in the first round. They only had 5 picks in the NFL draft, and they spent the first one on a running back. And every team in the NFL needs positional players at all different spots. Nobody's perfect anywhere. So they could have used that pick anywhere. They took Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So to even think that that guy isn't going to rocket propel into the fantasy world here in the next year or 2 years is just asinine.
We got to quickly talk about Davis adding very delicate, well placed Kindlingwood to the debate by jumping in Kelly's mentions and asking him how it felt to be on team hashtag running backs matter after the show went down.
I mean, here's the thing: like you can have a lot of arguments, you can throw out a lot of things, but at the core of what you're arguing is that Jonathan Taylor is so talented that it doesn't matter that he plays for a worse football team. Mm-hmm. And, if we knew that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was going to get 200 touches a year to Jonathan Taylor's 300, you still would probably take Clyde Edwards-Helaire, right? Because that's how much better his situation is than Jonathan mm-hmm. Taylor's.
I mean, 100%. That's exactly the corollary right there. I mean, Austin Eckler saw 108 targets. So that's substantial. Will Clyde Edwards see that? Yeah, he may see that at some point in his career.
No, he will see like 75 a year.
I think he can go. I mean, Andy Reid's done it. He's had 3 guys go over 100 in the past, been as high as 118. So it's
yeah, but when he's done it, he hasn't had Travis Kelce, who is like so. Actually, here a very pro Clyde Edwards-Helaire argument would be that Travis Kelce for this year and maybe next year is still going to dominate the 4-yard passes, the quick screens, like that. Travis Kelce is their guy for that. But Travis Kelce's 31 years old. He's not going to play forever, right? He's not Jason Witten on Ryan's Raiders. Ugh. So you know, like we're going to get to a scenario where Clyde Edwards-Helaire becomes the more obvious short yardage or quick pass option, and then I think we'll see his targets scale up by quite a bit.
I think that the thing, though, with Clyde Edwards is just the way that they've talked about using him. The fact that they know that if they put him out in space where linebackers are on him, they know that that's almost indefensible. So I guess to your point, I know that there's a lot of targets being displaced in this offense. But when it comes down to it, what's the easiest target?
But it literally doesn't matter. So last year, LeSean McCoy, 129 touches, 5 touchdowns, 646 yards, 5 yards a touch. Damian Williams, 141 touches, 711 yards, 7 touchdowns. I mean, the thing is that it just does not matter because, if we just did this math real quick on what a target was worth in the Kansas City offense, it'd be worth a lot more than 2.83, right? Like, yes. Like a target in this offense is just worth a lot more than random targets from other quarterbacks.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, just looking at it right off the bat, they're obviously going to spread the target share amongst the running backs in this offense, but they were already pushing around 100 targets across the running backs in the offense anyway. So of course it's going to get spread more than that. I'm just super high on Clyde Edwards. Obviously you're high on him. I'm just glad to go on a podcast, Davis, where I don't have to fight somebody about this. I don't want to fight about Jonathan Taylor anymore. He's a fine running back for the second pick in a rookie draft.
I mean, I was out there standing for him 2 weeks ago, right? I was saying, you know, you draft him with a top 20 pick in your startups, you know, before the NFL draft. I was ranking him number one overall ahead of Joe Burrow because I assumed that he was going to be the second running back off the board behind DeAndre Swift, and that you know, I just was never that much of a DeAndre Swift guy, really. So I just sort of assumed that Jonathan Taylor would end up in a better situation for his usage in year one. And I mean, the Swift truthers, Ryan, they gotta be eating it because he's just never gonna be good for fantasy, probably.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and we talk about landing spots. You know, Detroit's a team, and we can talk about if you know how long you know Detroit is for Matt Patricia and the current staff. But I mean, this current establishment, this current group has come out and said they want their running backs to split work. They still got Kerryon Johnson, who plenty kind of went out of their way for last year. They have a running back in the backfield. I'm not gonna say his name, Davis. Maybe running back that you kind of gravitated towards a little bit, a former Alabama back. So you know, Swift again,
the best running back on the roster.
I guess there. So between him, between Johnson, between the team's pension to split carries. I mean, Swift's ability as a receiver sets the floor pretty comfortably, but if we talk about bad landing spots, I guess Swift's was certainly less than ideal for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't own DeAndre Swift in any dynasty leagues. And I won't. I think if you wanted to make the situational argument, I think you could actually legitimately argue Keyshawn Vaughn over DeAndre Swift. I do not have them ranked that way, but I think that argument is actually very similar to the Jonathan Taylor, Clyde Edwards-Helaire debate.
Davis, you're not crazy. You're not crazy at all, because when you asked me the question earlier, who landed in the stone cold worst spot, I said Jerry Jeudy, but in the back of my mind, I wanted to talk about
yeah, Swift is close.
Because Swift, on the surface, to people, casual fans, may not think it was a bad spot to go to Detroit. But let me tell you, and I've been getting killed for using coach corollary and offensive coordinator corollary, but Darrell Bevell is a nightmare for running backs at times. He's had Adrian Peterson, he's had Marshawn Lynch, and Adrian Peterson had a 57 target season once in his career. But you look at it, oftentimes the second back in the offense or that third down back in the offense gets a lot of touches. And we know that Matt Stafford in the past has targeted his running backs heavily, but even Kerryon Johnson in 2019, when Stafford was missing time, he only sees 15 targets while McKissick and Ty Johnson both go for over 30. So the usage to these running backs, especially the primary backs, isn't great. And secondly, like Ryan said, there's going to be a total touch squeeze here in terms of grinder opportunity, first and second down. Kerryon Johnson wasn't getting used as a pass catcher necessarily in 2019. We know Swift can catch passes, but what is his ceiling? And I don't know that he ever reaches it. Had he gone to the Kansas City Chiefs, other spot that I think people had talked about pre-draft, we might be talking about an entirely different situation. But going to Detroit certainly throttled him. And to your point, Keyshawn Vaughn being ranked over DeAndre Swift is not crazy, because we know Tom Brady's, you know, affinity for running back pass catching, you know, ability. We know that Tampa Bay has got this incredible offense for once. They've got the two tight ends. We've got the outside receivers. Keyshawn Vaughn can do everything. This offense is in love with him. And it's about fantasy points at the end of the day. So when you look at these two players and you look at their upside, I think you have to lean Keyshawn Vaughn in rookie drafts, not by necessarily taking him early, but by sitting back and taking him where he's currently ranked in ADP, because I think he's going to be a supreme value.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay, let's transition to this chat then. Let's transition to Keyshawn Vaughn chat. Are we sure he's good? Right? This is a guy who transferred from one bad school to another bad football school, and he was fine at Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt pretty much has a long history of like churning out fine running backs, and you know, there's generally a reason that they played at Vanderbilt and not at Alabama. You know what I mean, Ryan?
Yeah, he was a player that I wasn't getting David Montgomery vibes from him. I think he's a good bit more, you know, athletic, agile, whatever. You know, you watch him on tape, and he's a good bit more fun than a Montgomery was to me, kind of just grinding out those tough yards. But to Davis's point, this is a 23-year-old rookie. Across the board, just kind of an average back, you know, 74th percentile, 40-yard dash, speed score. Did pop college dominator wise, 90th percentile college dominator. Did get up to 28 receptions last year at Vanderbilt, so definitely has the ability to kind of be utilized in the pass game. And I think it goes back to landing spot and kind of if you're buying Vaughn, I think you're looking to capitalize on that short term window, playing with Brady, playing with, you know, Brady's full arsenal at his disposal, Gronk, and you got the wide receivers. You know, Vaughn has a pretty easy path. Nate and I talked about it last night. I think Ronald Jones just kind of stinks, so I think there's a good chance that, you know, Vaughn is that, you know, lead back or that back that, you know, Brady might develop a quick rapport with.
But what if Ronald Jones doesn't stink?
I'm almost positive that Ronald Jones does stink. I just feel like he is just, you know, he's a player that we can go back and look at, you know, the little bit of growth that he showed last year. And yeah, he became a little bit more comfortable as a pass catcher, but this was decent draft capital that the Buccaneers sunk into a 23-year-old Keyshawn Vaughn, who, to your point, bounced around a third round pick. You know, it wasn't a first round, it wasn't a second rounder, but a third round pick is still early round capital. And so I can see him.
My boy Pat Corain was on this show last week and basically made the point.
PK's the biggest Rojo guy though.
Now, to be fair, this is a biased source, but he made the, I think, relatively valid point that, like, you're flipping coins with third round picks, right? Those guys can hit but they're, you know, actually, as we're seeing, as we were talking about earlier with Daryl Henderson and Cam Akers, like, if a team spends a third round pick on you, they are not indebted to you. They will, if you suck, yeah, they're not gonna try and make it work for you if it doesn't work.
So my only thought with that is what about, I mean, we've seen it, I don't know if it was a product of just the New England system in general or just Tom, you know, Tom Brady doesn't have a rapport with any of these guys. So it's not a benefit to the rookie, not a benefit to Ronald Jones. I know he came out and he called Ronald Jones Ron and everyone got excited about that. Oh, he's got a nickname for him already, you know, narrative. But at the same time, you know, we always saw the shortest guy in the totem pole, so to speak, in New England thrive, whether it was touchdown production, you know, James White just smashing as a receiver. I think just baseline, if that's the type of player, you know, in the sample size that we have, the James White, Tom Brady connection, you know, I think that Keyshawn Vaughn draws a pretty close parallel just given his receiving ability and kind of maybe a player that I could see, you know, Tom Brady kind of leaning on more so than, you know, shaky hands, Ronald Jones.
So at what point does like Dare Ugumbawale like start to tilt Keyshawn Vaughn owners, Nate? Like what are we talking, like week four, week five? We're getting the Dare Ugumbawale tilt.
I mean, I think it would be about the time that that Keyshawn Vaughn blows the first blitz pickup or a ball bounces off his hands. That's about the
He's
time
done so.
Starts sweating. That's when you get real nervous because, yeah, I mean, Dare, that's – I mean, there you go. That's the guy that people are calling out. He had, what, 46 targets last year. So – and we know that you can call it a corollary, you can call it scheme, whatever you want, but Tom Brady has a propensity for targeting the running backs out of the backfield. He's done it for his whole career. At this point, it's innate. I mean, it's just part of his game. And if you've got the primary back in a Tom Brady offense, that can be a great thing. A guy that can read defenses pre-snap like that, that can find an easy check down. I mean, nobody's going to be surprised if Keyshawn Vaughn wraps up, you know, 2020 with 45 catches, with 50 catches. I wouldn't be surprised if he hit that point, but I'm not necessarily concerned either looking back at the college production, because we know that Illinois, no, not a great school. 2016, Ryan and I talked about this. Lovie Smith totally fucked him. It didn't work out for him. Transfer schools, goes and plays in the SEC, has some big games in conference championship games, has big games against other SEC schools. Flash the pass catching prowess, which is truly the requisite to being the guy in a Tom Brady offense. I mean,
and in a Bruce Arians offense, by the way.
Sure. Yeah. In a Bruce Arians offense. I mean, and Ronald Jones stinks as a pass catcher. He might not stink as a runner, but he stinks as a pass catcher.
Remember the stories last year about the coaches being like, dude, his hands are like, he can't, like his hands are all messed up. He like, I'm just imagining him in practice, like not understanding how to catch the football. Like literally not, like Zoolander level of like looking at it and being like, I don't understand what to do. Like, dude, just catch the ball. Like, it's the easiest position to catch the ball at, Rojo. Like, come on, bro.
I want to say there was probably, and I don't have it in front of me, I'm not going to dig it up, but I want to say there was a quote where Jones came out himself and was like, listen, like, I'm not that good at it yet, but I'm practicing, you know, whether it was just a little bit after he got drafted or maybe after his rookie year. But like, again, this is at this point, as Nate alluded to, this is irrefutable. Ronald Jones isn't a good pass catcher. Can he develop into one? I don't know, but I think the pressure's certainly on at this point, and we could see, you know, Vaughn get inserted sooner than later.
I mean, Davis, if Leonard Fournette gets 100 targets,
here we go. It's always, dude, he comes back.
It's always back to Fournette.
Sky is the limit.
I mean, okay, so this is, I think, the largest point you could make against overspending a rookie pick on Keyshawn Vaughn is that, so one, we acknowledge that running back is mostly about situation, right? And maybe not all of us acknowledge it, right? If some of us are out there, you know, Jonathan Taylor and it, or Arby's matter or whatever, but like running backs are largely not able to create fantasy value in and of themselves. They have to be in an environment that is structured to create fantasy points for them. Two things for Keyshawn Vaughn. One, the environment might be overrated right now in a couple ways. One, Tom Brady could be closer to done than anyone wants to admit. He will be only the second 43-year-old quarterback ever to start the year as his team's primary option. I believe it was Fran Tarkenton. I will look that up here in a few moments on Pro Football Reference. But we're essentially heading into uncharted territory here. Also, Brady, not good last year, right? You can bring up the PFF grades or be like, he made all the throws. He still got it all mentally. Like, I don't care. His stats have been bad for 3 years. And New England has not been a juggernaut offense in terms of like, oh, we're on the 35. Like, let's just go score a touchdown right now since 2016. Like, all of that is true.
I'm curious, just to get your super quick take on this. Like, what does bringing back Rob Gronkowski, both of them at this respective points in their careers, new environment, but what is reuniting? Does either help each other to the point where you're somewhat excited about the range of outcomes here?
I mean, I'm very excited about the return of Rob Gronkowski to professional football. I think he's the greatest tight end ever, probably the greatest touchdown maker in the history of football. Even if he is completely dusted off as a receiver, he'll be the best blocking tight end in football pretty much immediately upon his return. I guess my worries would just be that the injuries that sustained, you know, he broke his arm, he tore his ACL twice, he had back injuries. My worry would be that he just is not as explosive, and he will be like mostly a red zone guy as opposed to like a field stretcher, a guy who the safeties have to be worried about. I mean, he will probably be one of the 15 best tight ends in the NFL in terms of his on-field impact. And the, you know, the on off Gronk splits for Brady's career are like, he looks like best quarterback ever when Gronk is on the field, and he looks like Andy Dalton when Gronk is off the field.
Quick Andy Dalton shade. I love it.
Yeah. So I think the risk for Keyshawn Vaughn might be that the situation is not as rosy as we might think, right? If Brady's play has declined. And then, I mean, how long do we seriously think Tom Brady is going to play?
7 more years. Listen, Davis, here's the thing. I don't know. He's got the heart of a lion.
He probably does think, like, I'm going to play till I'm 50.
At this point, why not? He's 42. He's going to be 43. You know, he was not an accurate passer last year. And I'm wondering, as I go through this, you know, is his concern of his own abilities maybe the reason that he defaults more to the running back? You know, like, being afraid.
Easier throws to make.
Sure. I mean, and he knows he can make those throws, and he knows that, again, he can read a coverage and find the easy check down. But, yeah, he was inaccurate. As far as how many years he's going to play, I mean, realistically, like, would anybody be surprised if 3 years from now we're still watching Tom Brady play in Tampa Bay?
I mean, he is absolutely psychopathic, and because he has won so many Super Bowls, I think it's a scenario where teams will keep giving him jobs no matter how bad he is. You know, this is actually a true story, though. Peyton Manning did not retire. He was after they win the Super Bowl and Denver said, "Thanks for your service, Peyton. We appreciate it."
Thanks for stopping.
He was still trying to sign with teams, and teams were just like, "You know, you had a good run, buddy."
Yeah.
Yeah.
No thanks. Right?
And I don't know. I mean, I think that teams will be giving Brady chances until Brady is like, you know, that's it.
Yeah, I think he brings that locker room presence, right? He checks all the coachy, you know, cliche boxes that you could ever want in a teammate and a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just true with most quarterbacks who have a lot of accomplishments. Like Phillip Rivers was one of the five worst quarterbacks that started games in the NFL last year, and the Colts gave him $25 million mm-hmm. to come in and basically be worse than Jacoby Brissett. So. Like, you know, like it's this is not exclusive to just Tom Brady. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of risk with Keyshawn Vaughn, and I tend to be more with the haters, even though I'm not really a hater per se. I just don't really get it, you know. There's just a lot going on there. There's so many things that can go wrong for Keyshawn Vaughn. Like, he might not be that good. He might lose third down. Sadari Ogunbowale might. Ronald Jones might just, you know, all of a sudden become an NFL caliber player. Tom Brady could decline. Let's talk about this, Nate. Maybe this isn't going to be that high volume of an offense, and all of the touchdowns are going to be accounted for by actual good players.
In Tampa Bay?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's a scenario, but I just think that when the play breaks down or at any point during it, you always have this weapon out of the back.
Yeah, you get the safety valve.
It's just automatic. So I just think that's why Keyshawn Vaughn is still a player that I like. And again, I think the overall point of what I was trying to say was that I'm not going to reach for Keyshawn Vaughn.
Yeah, that's
but if Keyshawn Vaughn falls into my lap at the end of the first round or, mm-hmm. you know, at the turn at the 201, depending on what league you're playing in, if you're playing in super flex, I think he's going somewhere at like 112. But I'm sitting back on him. Like DeAndre Swift, man, that guy could be in a committee forever. Who knows if 2 years from now when Kerryon Johnson's gone, because again, Kerryon Johnson's there till 2021. So if 2 years from now, Detroit goes, well, we need to add another back, and they go get a big back, or they go get a shifty back in the third round or the second round, and just perpetually DeAndre Swift is in this committee backfield, like that would just kill me. And then you got the idea that Keyshawn Vaughn, really, I don't know what Ronald Jones is. I know he can't catch the ball. Again, I'm going to lean on that. He had over 1,000 scrimmage yards last year, which is shocking. Then over 40 targets, which again is shocking because he can't catch the fucking ball. But I think that Keyshawn Vaughn has so much upside in this offense, in theory, that if he falls to me and I'm looking at running backs, because the hard next back after him is A.J. Dillon for most people, I believe. I mean, in your ranks, Davis, who do you have?
Correct. Yeah, A.J. Dillon is the seventh running back.
Right, so that's typical. But A.J. Dillon is kind of in that same classification as Dobbins for me, where he's a year out. Because if they don't re-sign Aaron Jones, who's the Packers are against the cap, if they don't re-sign Aaron Jones, then they have a running back that they believe is a better pass catcher than anybody else has really believed that he was. And all of a sudden, okay, this is the guy that's now the Green Bay back. And he's being drafted much later than Keyshawn Vaughn. He's being drafted way later than Dobbins, but they're both guys that are a 2021 hedge. I know Dobbins could break through maybe middle of the year, early year. We know that Ingram's getting a little older, but he's still functional in that offense. So he'll continue to linger. But he's more of a 2021 guy where we feel like he's really going to explode on the scene. So for Keyshawn Vaughn, I don't feel like that hurdle's necessarily there. I mean, third round is not the worst draft capital. I think for me, when you've got a running back of Ronald Jones' inabilities, that's shown that he couldn't really get it together the first year. Then the second year, we still had some question marks, and even he's out here alluding to the fact that he doesn't know how to use his hands to catch a ball. And then you go take a running back just 12 picks into the third round, well, what is that telling you? Because I don't know. I haven't necessarily read into it. Did Tom Brady have any say in who was being drafted? I mean, was he behind the scenes helping to push the buttons? If he was Keyshawn Vaughn maybe one of those guys that he said, hey, we need to add a guy. This is the guy. I'm not a fan of Ronald.
I mean, I do not believe that Tom Brady's out here breaking down Vanderbilt film in the year of our Lord 2020. I mean, maybe. Maybe. I mean, he's too busy, like, eating strawberries, dude. That's like...
I'm trying to draw you narratives, Davis. I'm trying to...
Love a good narrative,
show
man.
...show to new heights.
All right. When will Darrington Evan be the starting running back for the Tennessee Titans, Ryan?
Man, so what do we... What do we got here, boys? How old? Do we have an age for Derrick Henry? 20. So Derrick Henry's 25, 26. I think, you know.
But he is not signed. He's on a franchise tag, bro. They have that positive sentiment from the playoff run, you know, before they got dunked on by the Chiefs, and you know, they paid Tannehill and everything. Well, paying Tannehill is not gonna work out. Paying a running back a ton of money, not gonna work out for them. So we're going to be in a scenario where that feel good is gone, right? All that they're riding high on the emotion. They give Derrick Henry the money. All that is going to be gone in just a little bit here. So they're not going to pay Derrick Henry. That's my take. They don't pay Derrick Henry.
We assume that teams will sensibly approach the running back position in that manner. And I think Christian McCaffrey is a good bit different of a running back than a Derrick Henry, especially. So again, we won't go down that road right now, but we assume that teams will be logical when they're handing out money to running backs. So Derrick Henry might be another one of those cases where the only narrative that I can spin for Derrick Henry is he was so much that team's identity last year. When Vrabel talks about him, when all these guys talk about him, all they want to do is feed Henry and watch him run over defenders. And again, he is now going to be another year older. You know, we got AJ Brown that's developing, that's quickly ascending. But it goes back to Tannehill. You know, how much faith do you have in Tannehill to properly distribute the football? They might always just be this team that's going to keep feeding through the ground game, which was going to benefit Henry in the short term. But again, then again, if they do the smart thing, to Davis's point, and turn away from Derrick Henry, I think that path opens super quick. So kind of like a Dobbins, as Nate was saying, might be a year or two out. I think the window for Evans is maybe two years out, you know, depending on how things shake out with Derrick Henry. I'm assuming that they don't pay him, but we've seen crazier things happen. But as soon as Henry vacates, man, it is for sure the Darrington Evans show.
Just how high can CeeDee Lamb fly, Nate? How high are we talking here? Do we believe that CeeDee Lamb is of the variety of player who can have an overall wide receiver one in his NFL career?
He can, but Davis, he cannot have it with Amari Cooper there. There's just no way.
They can get out of his deal in 2 years. So when CeeDee, when those wings are flapping, when he is when he is in his Optimus Prime mode, they're going to say, Amari, thank you for your service. We love everything you've done for this organization. Be free, young man.
You're correct, Davis. So he did just sign a big contract, 5 years, $100 million. Yeah, after 2021, there's an out in his contract. It's only $6 million a dead cap. And that's about the point when CeeDee Lamb would essentially spread his wings and fly. And the concern for me, and I've talked about this on a ton of different shows, is that it does happen every year, but it's extremely rare for a quarterback to prop up two top 15 wide receivers. So whether it's Amari Cooper or whether it's CeeDee Lamb, it's going to be incredibly difficult for this to happen. Now, they would be prime candidates of a team to do it, but the problem is you have Ezekiel Elliott there, a guy that got a massive contract as well, and they're going to let him run the rock a lot. What I look at is 2021, the year where there's a proposed 17th game. In a season like that, I think you scale back Ezekiel Elliott a little more, trying to save him. I know Tony Pollard steps up at that point, but that might be the year where there's the potential for both these guys to play much bigger roles together. But until Amari Cooper is gone, I just don't know that CeeDee Lamb really hits the ceiling that we're all looking for. I think he could be a top 20 guy potentially in a great year, almost like Michael Gallup. I think Gallup was number 22 this year. But for him to really creep into that top 15, man, that is a crowded group of wide receivers.
Crowded group of wide receivers, but a lot of fantasy points to be scored in Dallas. Give it to me, Ryan. Give me the good news,
dude. I mean, being tied to Dak Prescott, which again, the Cowboys have to give this guy his money at some point in time. I mean, this offense is just prime, man. They got out from Jason Garrett. You know, a totally new approach. I think Nate hit on all the points. I mean, the concern is how much they're probably going to keep utilizing Ezekiel Elliott. But again, this is a team that had arguably the draft's best wide receiver just fall on their lap. You know, the Dallas draft in general is just phenomenal, which is super weird because of all the Jerry Jones jokes that were flying around pre-draft and how he was going
to
do.
Man, I was so ready for Jerry Jones to be on a yacht and just, you know,
cigar and shit.
I mean, I don't know what they did in that building to get everything ready for him, but they figured it out, man. What a sure. draft.
For sure. And CD again has the potential, for sure.
Big time. Okay. The best fourth round rookie pick is who, Nate?
The best fourth round rookie pick. This is an interesting one. So I grabbed Gabriel Davis in a couple of the leagues that I play in because he was falling to the wayside. That's a guy that went to the Buffalo Bills that they're a fan of. I realize that Stephon Diggs is there, John Brown. It's a little crowded at this point, but I think that's a guy that's got enough upside, proved it in college, has the physical stature, and went to a team that maybe in the future, by the time he potentially develops, could utilize him on the outside.
Yeah, I'm in on him for sure. I think my nomination is it's gonna be Albert O, because one, tight end is a lot of these leagues that all of us play in are tight end premium anyways. But you know you're looking at fourth round guys and you're like, you know, I mean, it's great to get any sort of return from a fourth round pick. Like if you're able to turn a fourth round pick into a guy you can start once or twice, like that's great. You're loving that. But it's even better to turn in a pick that has no downside if you miss, because every fourth round rookie pick misses. But if Albert O hits, we're talking about a dude who's like 600 yards a season, 50 catches, 8 touchdowns, Ryan, because he's just the role that he projects in. And if you remember when Albert O played with Drew Lock, 13 touchdowns as a freshman in Missouri.
I just keep touching all these fantastic, super corny cliches and narratives here. But again, the story is that Elway called up Drew Lock, who the Broncos are clearly going to build around, at least for the short term here, and hoping that things take off. And he asked Drew, you know, what do you think about Albert O? And obviously Drew went to bat for his guy, given the connection back at school, and now they're on the same roster again. So I think Albert O has a pretty relatively easy way to kind of talk yourself into a story there, especially if you really truly believe in the whole narrative. The name that I'm going to throw out there is my guy Joe Reed. Now the Chargers, you know, talk about these players at the breakout finder loves Joe Reed, kind of like a less, you know, athletic, a less flashy version of like a Deebo Samuel. Just did it all for Virginia: punt returns, kick returns, wide receiver out of the backfield, just super, super dynamic. We like these dynamic players. You know, there's some questions, of course, about what the Chargers are going to look like going forward with Herbert in the center. But I think there's a way for Joe Reed to kind of splash early on special teams where he's made money before in the past. And all of a sudden they're getting more involved a lot quicker. So Joe Reed's been a guy that I've kind of tabbed early on. Kind of like the landing spot, given the kind of moving pieces and the unknown, the ability for him to kind of snatch onto some decent volume. So Joe Reed's my fourth round gem.
I mean, the Chargers have been looking to find a third wide receiver since Phillip Rivers was like, since Drew Brees was the quarterback, right? I have some Sehi Eratutu memories. So that's how long they've been trying to solve this one. All right, who is this year's Terry McLaurin? So this could be late round draft pick, undrafted free agent, you know, basically is going to be a pickup in the deepest of dynasty leagues, you know, after the season has started. Nate, where are we going for this one?
Oh my gosh. Late round. See, this is where this one got really hairy for me. But one of the guys that I was a big fan of, and I'm really hoping that we see the breakthrough from him, was going to be Donovan Peoples-Jones. I mean, he's a super late round guy, but I don't know what the story is with Odell Beckham. This offense is,
you guys love these guys who are five-star high school recruits.
Dude, we're all about the stars.
I mean, this is, you're talking about what Brian, wasn't he number one?
he was a freak, man. He was a freak. He was the guy in that cycle for sure.
Yeah, so he was definitely number one. But then we saw him pop with the athleticism, which is something that we knew that he could do. But there was just struggles at Michigan, and he never really peaked out, I think, at the level that people had expected. Play with good teammates there. You know, we have guys coming out next year as well.
Yeah, but he never had a quarterback, though.
Exactly. Yeah. He never had a quarterback. So the situation never really manifested itself for him over there. But this is a guy that fell really late. Sixth-round pick in the NFL draft. Has the athleticism. I mean, had the pedigree coming out of high school. I mean, God damn, the guy was at the very top of an absolutely loaded class, a smash class. So that would be the guy for me, especially in an offense where, you know, Jarvis Landry's not an ultra dynamic player. Does Odell Beckham, you know, does he stick around? I don't know what the stories are there. So that might be a name that could filter up later in the year.
I got two.
Go ahead. You go first.
All right. So one of them is Aaron Parker, who played at Rhode Island, led his team in receiving yards for 3 years. He is going to be he's an undrafted free agent. He's on the Cowboys right now. I would imagine they probably cut him and he goes somewhere else. I think he is a guy who makes an NFL roster. The other one that I have been thinking about is Colin Johnson for the Jaguars, because they are so – that team is so desperate to find something at wide receiver. You know, they draft Chenault. They have Shark, but, you know, they let Marquise Lee go. They need someone at third wide receiver, and I think Colin Johnson has the – potential to be a guy who plays as a rookie right away.
I think this player was I won't say he's polarizing, but I think there was a lot of film guys and I think a lot of analytics guys that kind of gravitated towards him. Isaiah Hodgins out in Buffalo, 6'4", 210, went in the sixth round, so a bit further down than I thought he would have went. Decent college dominator, decent college target share. Kind of that big body, you know, touchdown producer. The only problem is Buffalo seems to be it's not a very smooth path to the top out there in Buffalo. You know, they brought on Diggs. They still got Smokey Brown, Gabriel Davis, a guy that we all hit on before. So again, the path isn't very clear for Isaiah Hodgins, but I think he's a good bit more talented than a six round receiver. Now you talk about Terry McLaurin and the volume and all this stuff. I don't know if that's Hodgins off the bat, but I want to say that, you know, talent wise, he again spoke to me as more than just a six round pick. So I kind of like the fit in Buffalo a little bit.
All right. Do we have any other takes to get out there, Nate, or are we just about done?
Listen, man, I want people to just, you know, leave mercy on Leonard Fournette, believe in him. If he sticks around in Jacksonville, I like him this year. I'm not giving up Davis. I know we've had our moments. We gotta bury the hatchet on this one. I'm a fan of Leonard Fournette. As far as the draft takes, my big draft take is going to be that not this year, but the next year, Michael Pittman is going to be the wide receiver from this class that people regret not drafting.
Give me a minute on why that is true of Michael Pittman.
I'll give you a minute on Michael Pittman. No problem. So, you know, you got Phillip Rivers there for at least 1 year. We don't know what the future holds. We talked about this earlier, but Michael Pittman is a guy that the Colts absolutely loved. And here's why. They had the second pick on day two of the NFL draft. They didn't trade it away. They sat on it. They fielded offers. They didn't do anything with it. They selected Michael Pittman. They did not select Jonathan Taylor. They selected Michael Pittman. Michael Pittman is a hedge against a guy like T.Y. Hilton. Look, T.Y. Hilton is going to be 30 and a half, 31 years old next year. He's on the end of his contract this year. Paris Campbell's had injuries, surgeries. We don't know what he is yet. All they have is Jack Doyle there. So to me, Michael Pittman is the guy. Good athlete as well. Had a 111.2 93rd percentile speed score at 223 pounds. Had one of the best 10-yard splits of any wide receiver in the group. So, you know, in terms of press coverage, a guy that gets off the line quick. It was faster than Jalen Reagor, Justin Jefferson, Brandon Ayuk. This is a guy that even Warren Sharp started to talk about with Phillip Rivers and his propensity to target big wide receivers. Malcolm Floyd, you know, Vincent Jackson, Antonio Gates, Keenan Allen, Tyrell Williams, Mike Williams. So there's certainly something there with that. And Coach Frank Reich even talked about the fact that with Phillip Rivers, they want to try and get the completion percentage up around 70%. And I don't think that's an impossible task, especially when you look at the type of player that Michael Pittman was the final 2 years at USC. He was a deep threat in his junior year, averaging 18.5 yards per reception. And just last year, he was a total volume magnet, a guy that could play on all parts of the field and became a possession receiver. And I think that's the type of guy that Phillip Rivers can really jive with. And when T.Y. Hilton goes and that target share gets a little bit of a bump in 2021, if Rivers is still there, I still believe that Michael Pittman could have a massive year.
Man, the only concern about him is the take I've been giving out is these dudes who stayed at school for all 4 years, there's something wrong with them. We oftentimes don't know what it is until they get to the NFL, but history has been a good teacher that in general, something is wrong with these guys who stay all 4 years. Ryan, any final takes?
The only take I'm going to throw out there, boys, is I'm going to reach back in the college realm, a bit of a Debbie take here. David Bell is going to be the best wide receiver out of Purdue, not Rondale Moore.
Wow. I mean, doesn't Rondale Moore weigh like 167 pounds?
Oh, it's coming, Davis. It's coming.
There's a more important number that you're not saying.
He might be like 5'5", Davis. I don't know.
He might be 5'4". We don't know yet.
Isn't Bateman really small too, the Minnesota guy?
No, I think he should be like 5'10" or something like that.
Yeah. Much bigger than he is.
Much bigger than Rondale Moore.
Yeah. Rondale Moore is, I mean, he's shockingly small. Like, dead serious. When he goes to the NFL Combine, because Ryan and I talk about this. Thank you, Ryan. he could be, honest to God, he could be 5'7". And everybody's talking about this guy being, like, the next coming of the greatest wide receiver that we've ever seen. But Davis, if he's 5'7", what do you do with him?
Yeah, ain't nobody got time for that.
Nobody.
You draft David Bell and profit, boys. I'm building base camp on David Bell Mountain, man. Join me.
I want to join you.
I'm in. Yeah, I just there's no way you're gonna catch a 5'4" guy on any of my teams, right? It don't work. All right, boys. Thanks for coming on the show, everyone. Go ahead and give these boys a follow on Twitter, and make sure to check out the Breakout Finder as well. They have awesome stuff going on over there. And we'll be back soon with more content to pump into your guys' veins.